Abner Maris is a world champion boxer, Olympian, sports commentator, and most importantly, dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Abner is a pro at entertaining the world, both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook with Abner Maris, we'll hear from Abner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who made him the boxer and man he is today. They chat about topics like the state of boxing, being a husband and a girl dad, sports, music, culture, and family life. Listen to On the Hook with Abner Maris each week wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes in English out on Tuesdays, and episodes in Spanish out on Wednesdays.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack a Day podcast.
Happy Monday, probably day, as you were not screaming at the Packers yesterday, so that's good. I hope you're well rested. Welcome back into the Pack a Day podcast, presented by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. And we're gonna get into some non-bye week stuff because it's finally over. I'm Alex Strofe. You can find me on Twitter at Alex_Strofe, joined every other Monday by the wonderful Andy Herman and Perry Goldstein. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hey, Alex. Doing great. I think you reversed those. I think it's just normal Andy Herman and the wonderful Perry Goldstein.
That's totally average Andy Herman.
That's inaccurate.
Everything good with you, Perry? How's it been?
Good. I'm happy to be back. I know I missed an episode 2 weeks ago. Already feels like forever ago that Saints game was played, but so happy to be back with you both. And unfortunately, we don't have Packers to talk about, but I think we'll find a way to chat about some bye week things.
Yeah, we're gonna get to a little question rotation, fun little thing, activity we'll call it later in the episode. But we might as well jump at least a little bit into what happened in the world of the National Football League on Sunday. One of the, if not the biggest headline, though, not a fun one. Dak Prescott, gruesome ankle injury, had surgery Sunday night. We're recording Sunday night, so no updates on the surgery yet. But looking like Dak Prescott, who is on the franchise tag, will be missing some extended time. You just never like to see that, Andy.
No, you don't. It's the worst part about sports, and it's such a juxtaposition of having Alex Smith come back from a 2-year injury and working his way back. What do they say? 17 surgeries he had to come back and have this great story in the noon games, and then the 3:30 slot comes and goes, and Dak Prescott goes out with just a gruesome injury. He's crying on the cart. Your heart just breaks for him. Yeah. He's in that the last year of his deal. They franchised him. They didn't give him the long term contract. In a way very different, but in a way somewhat similar to Lane Taylor. Kind of playing on not that contract extension, trying to go out, prove himself, and get that big deal. You hated to see it for Lane. You hate to see it for Dak. And, it's just one of those situations where, I'm not sure there's been anything where I've seen everyone come together in the way that everyone was so supportive of Dak, which was great to see. From all accounts, just one of the great people in all of football. As difficult as it is to cheer for the Cowboys from time to time, it's so easy to cheer for Dak Prescott, and just really hoping that he recovers well and is back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, despite the injury to Dak, the Cowboys did get the win on Sunday. But Perry, obviously, this is a crushing blow, as Andy mentioned, to the Cowboys.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with everything Andy said. I thought the juxtaposition of watching Alex Smith, take his first snaps under center, and then to watch another, I think Alex Smith and Dak are very similar in that it's just like kind of impossible to root against them. And then Dak goes down with a somewhat similar injury, although I hope that his recovery is quicker and less scary. But I think that just looking at his situation with the Cowboys, I personally would be very surprised if he was the quarterback for the Cowboys next season. I think that his time in Dallas is up, and he's going to get the contract that he deserves, but it's going to be with another team.
Yeah, maybe not even the contract he deserves, Perry, just with this injury, depending on the outcome. But of course, we hope it's a lot less severe than that of Alex Smith. And I think we should get to that now, because that's one of the big notes of Sunday as well. And I don't want to brush over the terrific and almost historic, I'd say, comeback that Alex Smith has made. I tweeted on Sunday, as soon as Kyle Allen went down and Alex Smith went into that game for the Washington football team, you can hand that man the comeback of the year trophy. I mean, that is just unbelievable stuff, Perry.
Yeah, no, it's, I was definitely nervous watching it. Like any time, like he got sacked, I think 6 times or something like that. And every time anyone got close to him, I was like, oh my God, I hope his leg is okay. But obviously he wouldn't be in there if he wasn't fully healthy. And I don't think him or his family would put his body in jeopardy. So nonetheless, just an amazing, amazing thing to watch. I think anytime I get sick or stub my toe, like I'm not allowed to complain anymore after watching his journey.
I think that's fair. And, you know, the interesting thing about that NFC East with the Cowboys coming back and winning against the Giants, it's easy to kind of gloss over that when you lose your starting quarterback. And make no mistake, this is a major shatter point in the, you know, franchise of the Dallas Cowboys. As we already talked about, what happens with Dak from here on out? Is he even in their plans? You know, is he healthy for the start of next season? Does he exit because he's frustrated that he didn't get the contract prior to this injury? This changes the Cowboys franchise, not only this season, but for here on out. And of course, Mike McCarthy, the head coach in Dallas, but they did, you know, secure a win today coming back against the Giants. It wasn't pretty, but oddly enough, they're 2-3 in the NFC East, which is, oh, by the way, good enough for first in the NFC East. And even with Andy Dalton at quarterback, I'm not so sure that this isn't the best team still in the NFC East right now.
I don't know how they're not, right? I mean, maybe you could talk about Philadelphia, but what we saw from the 49ers on Sunday is they got blown out. They didn't only lose to the Miami Dolphins, they got blown out by the Miami Dolphins. So maybe that Sunday night win over the 49ers isn't as impressive for Philly now. But, you know, Mike McCarthy, you know, under 500 and still in first place. I guess that'll get the job done, Mike. We're proud of you. So let's go over to that 49ers loss, if you guys don't mind. They just get pummeled, as I said, by the Dolphins. The final was 43-17. The Dolphins were up 30-7 at halftime. Jimmy G was benched. They said it was precautionary for health purposes, obviously. But just interesting stuff. I mean, that is the reigning NFC champion, and they are getting blown out by the Dolphins, Andy. This is unreal, man.
It is. And Alex, you and I spoke with, you know, Jacob Westendorf and Peter Bukowski yesterday, or I should say Saturday, and had a great conversation. And one of the conversations that we brought up, and kudos to Peter for saying this as much as it pains me to say that, you know, he brought up that, you know, this isn't the same 49ers team as a season ago. And while I think myself and a lot of people have kind of felt like that Packers game in San Francisco is going to be a good litmus test, maybe it's not quite the litmus test that we expected. And this is not the 2019 San Francisco 49ers in a variety of different ways. Jimmy G gets benched today. He looked like a shell of himself. And I think we were talking off air about this, but as Perry mentioned, you know, I think his injury was certainly playing a part in that. He didn't seem like he was, you know, fully confident planting and kind of throwing and just having that confidence in his throwing motion. So I think that's a big piece of it. But their defense, I shudder to think how many people that they've had injured so far. And it's not just like they're missing 5 or 6 guys here and there. Like Nick Bosa is done for the year. And even besides injuries, like DeForest Buckner, trading him prior to the season, that is a major loss for that team. And I get, you know, that they've, you know, tried to make replacements. Javon Kinlaw is a really nice young rookie, but they've lost a lot along that defensive line. Dee Ford is out right now, and their secondary is beat up. Their offense is beat up. And regardless, I look back to a couple seasons ago when Green Bay played San Francisco at home, and this was before that, you know, that Kyle Shanahan offense really had, you know, been in full steam, and, you know, before they made their big playoff run. I think that was a team. It was Nick Mullins the quarterback, or maybe it was Beathard that I think it was Beathard that night.
Yeah,
that was the quarterback against the Packers. They still put up 30 some points and made that a competitive game, and Aaron Rodgers had to go out and make a big comeback in that season. You know, the 49ers have been competitive for a very long time. You know, no matter what the injuries have been, no matter what the situation has been, that was not the case today. And I think the question is fair right now. We talked about, are the Cowboys the best team in the NFC East? Are the 49ers the worst team in the NFC West?
I think so, right? I think you'd almost have to, you know, through 5 weeks, at least that's what it seems in this small sample size, but that's almost, you know, a third of the season. So yeah, I think right now the Cardinals are still kind of, you know, it's really hard to gauge where they're at, but they got a nice win on Sunday against the Jets. So again, hard to gauge where they're at 3-2. But the 49ers just aren't the team of last year, as you said, Andy. And, you know, when you think about that 2019 49ers team, you think of the defensive line. And now looking, you mentioned DeForest Buckner out of there. Solomon Thomas is on the IR. Nick Bosa is on the IR. You look at that defensive line as the best core part of that team a year ago, maybe. So definitely tough. And that allowed the Ryan Fitzpatrick to light a little Fitz magic. But Perry, would love to hear your 49ers take.
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously, I think everyone across the league is dealing with injuries and a lot more serious than I think I've ever seen. I haven't seen as many like Achilles tears and ACL tears than we have this season. And I think that's contributing from, you know, the lack of the offseason or the shortened offseason, I should say. And I think there's something to be said for the shortened offseason also affecting like growth and cohesion across teams, and potentially the combination of the two is leading to a little bit of a slump from the 49ers. I hate the kind of superstition, but I feel like the loss in a Super Bowl, that hangover that next season is so real. We saw it with the Rams. They're just starting to bounce back again. And I wonder if that's what we're seeing with the 49ers as well. I'm not the biggest Jimmy G fan. I think he's like a little bit overrated and really just serviceable. And I think with losing so many key players, we're seeing some of those deficiencies from him. And there's only so much that Kyle Shanahan can do and can scheme up if Jimmy G just like can't throw the ball. So I don't know. I do think that they're in the bottom tier of the NFC West, but I mean, it was always going to be a competitive division, always. Like going into it, you knew all four teams were going to be good. And, you know, they're what, 2-3 after today, and they're in fourth. And then you look at the Cowboys and they're 2-3 and they're in first. So it kind of makes me think about is how maybe some of this divisional wins as a, you know, a means to getting into the playoffs maybe needs to be fixed a little bit.
It needs to be trashed a million percent. Like it makes no sense that you could have a really bad division like the NFC East and you're going to reward the best team in a crappy division and send them to the playoffs. And I get with like seven teams going in each conference, it maybe isn't that big of a deal anymore. But if there's not a team that's worthy of, you know, being in the playoffs, I guess I would put it this way. The division winner in each division gets in as long as you have a 500 record or better. Yeah. Like if you're below 500, you don't get in the playoffs. If you're still the seventh best team, then fine, so be it. But if you, the only way you get that automatic spot as a division winner is if you're a 500 or better. Otherwise, it goes to the next best team. I think that would be an easy fix for that. And no matter what, even if you are going to keep it, please, for the love of all things holy, reseed the playoffs so that the NFC East, you know, doesn't get the fourth seed right. And they're the seventh best team in the playoffs. It's just so dumb to do it that way.
It is, but you know they're never going to change it because it's the NFL, Andy. It's unfortunate, but I mean, we got an expanded playoff, I guess. I mean, now the two seed will beat up on the probably somebody that's 500 or 9-7. So be it. But we'll go from the reigning NFC champion losing on Sunday to the reigning Super Bowl champion losing on Sunday. The Raiders top the Chiefs, guys. I mean, they go down for the first time this year now, 4-1. The Raiders, though, up to 3-2, and they posted 40 points. Derek Carr looked really good again.
Yeah, I actually was able to watch that game. I in New York, I always, unfortunately, have to watch the Jets and the Giants. Those are the games that I get. But today, the football gods blessed me with a Chiefs game.
Lucky and, you.
Or I should say the broadcast gods, not really football gods. But it was awesome. The Raiders defense came to play. I really came to play. I haven't seen a defense sort of make Mahomes stumble in a way that the Raiders did today. And even with some magical, beautiful throws, the offense couldn't get it done. And in the fourth quarter, I think it's safe to always say, you know, the Chiefs are always in it. But going for it on fourth down, that's some Gruden balls right there. I loved it. It was awesome to watch.
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
It was awesome to watch. Andy, let me put it this way for you. Is this kind of a trap fluke game, or are the Raiders for real?
Yeah, I'm not a John Gruden believer in any way, shape, or form, but I think you have to take some notice after they beat the Chiefs. I think that's no easy task, no matter what. I do feel like this was, I don't know if it was, you could say it was building. I mean, they've had great wins against the Ravens and Patriots the last couple weeks, but I thought you saw some weaknesses against the Chargers early in the season where the Chiefs looked a little bit more beatable. And then in this game, they definitely look beatable. I still think the Chiefs are the scariest team in the NFL, you know, in the NFL, just a team that you don't want to play. And Mahomes is just so damn good. But I think this defense for the Chiefs isn't quite what it was a season ago. And I think teams are starting to figure out a little bit how to maybe slow, if not stop, this Chiefs team. You know, you look back, the Chargers held them to 23 points. The Patriots held them to 26. I know they got 32 today, but they were really 24 points and down by 16 before they kind of got a garbage time 8 points at the end. So again, this is still a very high powered and really talented Chiefs team, but you at least for the first time in a while start seeing a couple holes that teams have been able to kind of poke in their, what seemed like, invulnerability at one point.
Yeah, that's well said. I just want to double down on the sentiment you made. The Chiefs, by far, the last team you probably want to play in the NFL any given Sunday, though, as John Gruden and company get the win over the Chiefs in solid fashion. We mentioned Alex Smith made his return to the NFL field for the Washington football team, but they got rolled as the Rams 4-1. They look for real. 30-10 final in that one. Andy, would love to hear the diagnosis on Los Angeles. Perry mentioned just a bit ago that Super Bowl hangover a year ago, but they look more like they're back to 2018 form.
Yeah, I think getting Cooper Kupp back, it was a really big step for this team. And I think last year when they went out and got Jalen Ramsey, I don't think that he was, I think they were still trying to figure out how to use him. They basically used him last year primarily as an outside corner. And this year they're kind of moving him all over the place. Aaron Donald looks like himself once again. And I just think you're seeing this team win in a variety of different ways. You know, they did have the loss to the Bills and a couple of their wins. I mean, let's be fair. Their four wins are all against the NFC East. They beat the football team, the Giants, the Eagles, and the Cowboys. That's their four wins. Their one loss is against the Bills. And I think this team coming up is going to have a lot harder schedule. Not only do they face everyone in the NFC West twice, which is a really tough division, they've also got the Bears, the Seahawks, the Buccaneers, the Patriots. So this is a very, very difficult schedule upcoming for the Rams. And I think we're going to learn a lot more about them besides just maybe four wins against the NFC East. But I love what they're doing so far, both offensively and defensively.
You think they're a playoff team, Andy?
Oh, 1,000,000% a playoff team, and they're definitely going to get one of those seven spots. I'd be shocked if they didn't, but we'll see at the end of that stretch of really tough games if we're looking at, a team that's a number two, number three seed, or maybe squeaking in as a six or seven seed.
Yeah, that's a lot better than your food takes over the weekend. That Twitter on fire. Just making sure you didn't want another hot take there and say the Rams weren't going to make the playoffs. I just had to check. Perry, Los Angeles 4-1.
Yeah, I also agree with Andy that their wins are, they could be more impressive. Right. I think the team itself looks good. Obviously beating up, winning by 20 against the Washington football team, okay. I think they're probably really excited about their record going into the difficult stretch because it gives them some kind of cushion there. But playing some of these harder teams that are definitely going to I think affect the playoff landscape later in the season. That'll be an interesting litmus test for them. But I'm a fan of what they're doing. I didn't enjoy watching them struggle last season. I'm a big fan of Sean McVay. Obviously, very similar offense to Matt LaFleur, so it's easy to kind of like what he does on the football field. But I didn't enjoy watching them struggle, and I'm glad that they're got their footing back. I would be remiss if I didn't comment on just how dorky Jared Goff is. I think he is just the kind of anti QB1 in the best way possible. So yeah, it's I didn't catch a ton of it today. Mostly highlights from Alex Smith starting, but like what they're doing.
I was curious if either of you, you mentioned Jared Goff's dorkiness. Did you catch his failed spike where he
that's
threw it
what
like
I
20
was,
yards?
Yeah, that's what I was alluding to.
Yeah, wow. Goofy indeed. But the Rams, while the wins might not be super impressive, still 4-1. That's a pretty darn good record through five games. Another 4-1.
While he's a little bit dorky, Alex, I have to say, you know, he's played much, much better this season. And, you know, the touchdown interception ratio is only 6-2, but he's completing 72% of his passes. Wow. And it's been really interesting for me watching a couple of these quarterbacks closely, how Carson Wentz has gone from, you know, obviously those two were picked 1 and 2 in the draft, Goff 1, Wentz 2, how Wentz started out just gangbusters, looked like he was going to win the MVP of that season before he goes out. They win the Super Bowl with Nick Foles. He doesn't come back strong. And now Wentz is all over the place. His mechanics are messed up. Now that offensive line is brutal, the weapons aren't there. But I hate to use juxtaposition twice in the same, you know, open of the show here, but the juxtaposition between him and Jared Goff, who Goff looked terrible his first season, looked a little bit better with, Matt LaFleur helping, you know, guide the way in his second season. And then, kind of took a little bit of a step back. I think Cooper Kupp being gone, but he looks much improved this year. And right now, if you had to choose between Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, I think for the most part, everyone's picking Jared Goff at this point, which is crazy to say if you look at him just a couple years ago.
Yeah, quite the turn of events, but I totally agree. Perry, you would go Goff over Wentz, I assume?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, okay. Unanimous, I figured. I just wanted to be sure. Okay, good stuff. So 4-1, as mentioned, and Goff looks a ton better than he did a year ago. I mean, he signed that huge contract, and it looked like he could have been guilty of highway robbery a few times last year. But he's rebounded and has the Rams in a really nice spot in that really tough NFC West. Another 4-1 team is the Browns, as they got a win over the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday. And I saw an amazing stat that I had to retweet from McNeil, Reflog18 on Twitter. Kevin Stefanski has more wins with the Browns in 5 games than Hugh Jackson did in 40 games. I mean, that is just a ridiculous stat.
It really is. And my favorite quote from this game, and I had to pause for a second because as we're recording this, Dalvin Cook just kind of pulled up lame a little bit and is holding, I think, his hamstring, I want to say. So that's kind of a major development for the Minnesota Vikings as we're literally recording this at the moment. I'm still listening to you guys. I swear I wasn't watching the game. But
of course.
Going back to the Browns for just a second, my favorite quote from this game, what did Baker say? He said, "We're trying to be a bunch of big, hairy American winning machines," Baker Mayfield's quote from this game. So they're doing well so far at being a bunch of big, hairy American winning machines. And they now are I think they said 4-1 for the first time since before Baker Mayfield was born. I think I saw the statistic today. So this has been a fun team to watch. I'm kind of a Baker believer, even though he had a rough game, not a rough game, but not his best game today. He said it was their worst game, it was his worst game of the season so far. So he kind of thought the same thing, but I really do enjoy watching this Browns team win football games.
It's pretty easy to root for the Browns because they've been so bad for my entire living memory that when they win, it's like, oh yay, good for you. But I saw today that to what you just said, Andy, is that the last time the Browns were 4-1, Nick Saban was their defensive coordinator. So jeez, if that doesn't make you feel old, it's nice to see a team that's been bad for so long kind of maybe feel like they're finally breaking that curse. As someone, like I mentioned earlier, who has to always watch Jets games because they're always on here, I kind of feel that, you constantly are watching a team just be god awful. It's almost like you don't even want to watch. Mm-hmm. And so for Browns fans, it's really exciting. I'm not the biggest Baker believer, unlike you, Andy. But I think that their offensive weapons give him every opportunity possible to be successful. And they have the best rushing attack in the league right now. So it's really nice to watch.
And there's a clear difference, it almost seems, from Freddie Kitchens a year ago to Kevin Stefanski, who's found his footing really well. Not to give him too much credit as a former Vikings coach, but he's really found his footing well as the head coach of the Browns. So they're at 4-1 as well. A really, really, really good start. Yeah, longer than I've been alive, their best start. Unreal.
For sure. And just to give a update on Dalvin Cook, again, most people that are listening to this are probably already going to be aware of this on Monday, but he headed to the locker room and seems to be a groin injury is what the initial diagnosis is. So he's going to the locker room with trainers as we speak. So that'll definitely be something worth monitoring. And I know our next topic of discussion anyway, Alex, was going to be Dan Quinn. Yeah, you got this too. So yeah, not only was Dan Quinn fired, but Thomas Dimitroff, the general manager, both officially fired. So a lot of breaking news as we're recording the podcast here tonight.
Yeah, let's go to Atlanta because, you know, it seemed like it probably should have been a done deal. I don't know, maybe 365 days ago with Dan Quinn, but that's just my opinion on it. But here we are. It's a Black Monday in Atlanta as both Dan and Dimitroff are fired after their 0-5 start. I mean, Atlanta, they seem like a team with so much power on offense, and it seemed like a team that was just too darn talented to go 0-5. But the Panthers win their third straight. They're 3-2, 23-16 the final. But as mentioned, the big headline is Dan Quinn is out of Atlanta. And Andy, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. I didn't know this guy was a defensive coach until like 2 weeks ago. And it again didn't show a whole lot against that game, that game against Carolina. So, I mean, the writing's been on the wall, but here we are. I'd be interested to hear both of your opinions on Dan Quinn and now obviously the GM Dimitroff out of Atlanta. Perry, we can swing it to you first.
Yeah, it's interesting because it obviously is necessary. Right. You know, you're 0-5. To me, I'm kind of surprised that Adam Gase hasn't been fired first. But, you know, do you want to talk about a Super Bowl hangover? I mean, I feel like the Falcons haven't been able to get out of that 28-3 cloud since that game. And, you know, it's hard. How do I put this? It's hard to watch anybody get fired, even when you know that it's the right thing to do for the team. You know, that's a man who has a family who just lost his job. And so it pains me a little bit when I see people rejoicing over things like that, because you never want to see people lose their job. But, you know, Matt Ryan is, I think, he was at one point a great quarterback who's now a little bit lost his touch. Mm-hmm. And with potentially a new coaching regime coming in, you know, maybe the Falcons are in position to get one of those top quarterbacks in the coming draft. And so we might be seeing like a complete Falcons rebuild. I would be very curious to see who gets this job. I'm fully on the train of wanting Eric Bieniemy to finally get his first head coaching job. I think Falcons and Texans are probably the best landing spots for him. So definitely going to be on watch, but it's a bittersweet thing to see.
Just real quick, Andy, before you jump in, just a little bit more info. Is this literally the official press release from the Falcons just came out? Falcons president and CEO Rich McKay will oversee day-to-day oversight of football operations in the interim, and they will announce a interim head coach on Monday, the Falcons will. So that has not been named yet, but we will see who takes over at least on an interim basis later today, I'd assume. So, Andy, yeah, Dan Quinn and Dimitroff both out.
Yeah, and I think that it makes smart sense to have both kind of go together because I think there was flaws not only with the coaching, but I think there was flaws with the makeup of the roster as well. That, you know, this defense just didn't have, you know, really the horses or the players to run, you know, Dan Quinn's scheme the way that he wanted to. You know, their defensive front seven was okay, but their secondary was really a mess, not only due to injuries, but even kind of, you know, prior to that. And then from a coaching standpoint, and I absolutely appreciate your sentiments on this, Perry, as well, because I hate seeing, you know, people get fired. But I, you know, I think at some point when your job as a coach is obviously to get wins. And when not only are you in situations to win football games, but you choke them away so bad, going back to the Super Bowl, two big games, you're up ahead, you know, what was it, 17 some points in both of those games, I think it was. And you choke away both of those games. And then, you know, and then come back, play a really lackluster game against the Packers and then another lackluster game against the Panthers. I was honestly legitimately surprised that he was at that game at Lambeau. I thought after the second straight, you know, game where they blew the big lead, I thought that was going to be it going into week four. And I was very surprised that he made it to Lambeau, much less to Carolina. And now obviously he's not going anywhere past that. But at some point, we have seen teams over the years, and, you know, Belichick's a great example of this, but I think, you know, some of the Packer teams, you know, now and in the past too, some of those teams just know how to win football games regardless of situation, circumstance, etc. I think the Packers' recent win against the Falcons with all their injuries is a great example of that. In other teams, and you know the names as we've discussed already, usually the Browns, the Jets, you know, some of these front offices and coaching staffs that just don't know how to implement a culture. And this is an example of a team that just didn't know how to close football games, how to win football games. It didn't have that winning mentality. And Perry, you're 1,000,000% spot on. Ever since that Super Bowl loss where they really had their soul taken from them, they just haven't been able to recover. And this is now the birth of a new era in Atlanta, and it'll be interesting to see what direction they go in.
And that's a team that's been in the mix, it feels, since Matt Ryan's come into play, I think, in 2008. So it will be really, really interesting to see a rebuild for a team that was in the Super Bowl, what, 3 years ago. So that's just crazy, or 3.5 now, I guess. But nonetheless, that is mainly your football Sunday wrap-up recording, as mentioned, during the Seahawks-Vikings game, but an interesting one due to implications. Of course, Perry was very vocal on Twitter. She's cheering for the Vikings for the first time in her life, maybe, so it pains us all to see that happening. But non-football news on Sunday as well, just briefly. The Lakers won the NBA championship over the Miami Heat in Game 6. So kind of poetic, obviously, the year Kobe Bryant passes away and the Los Angeles Lakers again on top of the association. So there's a brief update from non-football stuff, but from general football stuff, we can now move into some Packers talk because that's what we do here, isn't it? And Andy, you were a quarter way through the season. You grade every player on every play. So you are more informed than probably anybody on this planet of how these players have been performing through 4 weeks. So you have your top five players through 4 weeks and your bottom five players on the roster through 4 weeks. I'm just going to give you the floor, my man.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You could get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline online today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Yeah, I'm not going to spend a super ton of time because I want to get into some of the questions we want to get into. But Perry, I'll ask you first. Do you want me to go through defense, or excuse me, the lowest graded first, or the highest graded first?
Let's start bad and then get to the good.
All right. So here's the good news of the bad. So even though I do have five players on this list, I only have two players that have graded below -1.0, which is insane. So wow. The other three players on this list are basically not far from neutral at all. So I really only have two players in the negative, and nobody's -3 or lower, which again is also really crazy. So the good news is the bad has not been bad at all, which I think is probably what most people would expect. I think this is the first time that we've gone four games into a season, and I haven't heard anyone like calling for anyone to be cut. I mean, maybe the defensive line early in the season, there was some angst about, but there's not been that player that's been like, oh, we got to get rid of this guy, you know, from a fan standpoint. So the fifth lowest on my list, well, actually is tied for fourth, I guess. Tyler Lancaster and Jay Sternberger, both with, again, very close to neutral grades, but -0.45 grades for both of them. Third was Josh Jackson, mostly from this last game that he got in and played a little bit more. Still very grabby, still very handsy. Probably could have called him for a couple of penalties that didn't get called. He did get called for a different one. That's kind of one concern I have, is if Jair or King were to go down, or Sullivan for that matter, is just kind of the depth in that in the cornerback room. And if Josh Jackson or Kadar Holman could step up, but Jackson's third. And then the two that really have graded in the negative so far, Preston Smith with a -2.6 and Dean Lowry with a -2.95. I think the big surprise here, Preston Smith, in 18 games a season ago, only two of those did I have him grade in the negative through again, 18 games. This year, he's graded in the negative in all four games, so double basically his negative grades from a season ago. His pressures are down per game. It's like 3.4 last year to 1.25 this year in pressures per game. Pro Football Focus is way down on him this year as well, so if you don't want to take my grades verbatim, you can check theirs out too, and they're kind of in the same boat I am. So a very disappointing start for Preston Smith. And then you know, if this is a self-scout, you know, time for the Packers to look at what they are doing both on offense and defense through that bye week, I really want to know what they're thinking of Dean Lowry, because to me, he hasn't brought anything to the field as a pass rusher. He's been wiped out of way too many plays as a run defender, not holding up at the point of attack. And to me, it's just it's time to go with, you know, obviously Kenny Clark when he gets back, but Kingsley Keke, Tyler Lancaster, even Montrevious Adams and maybe Billy Wynn. I know they can't call Wynn up anymore, but maybe it's time to add him to the 53. I just think it's time for less Lowry and more of kind of the other guys across the defensive line, just because he hasn't provided anything. He used to be able to be, you know, somebody who got his hands up and deflected some passes. We haven't seen that. So hopefully he can turn it around. But those are kind of my bottom five. As far as my top five, I don't think anyone's going to be too surprised by the names on this list. Number five, I have Jair Alexander with a plus 3.6. Number four is Aaron Jones with a plus 3.8. And then I can't say enough about number three and two on my list. Both Corey Linsley and David Bakhtiari have been as close to flawless as you can possibly imagine. Of course, of them, you know, both of them have to be free agents along with Aaron Jones. So two, three, and four on my list are all free agents, which is hashtag not great. But all three of those guys just playing fantastic football. And for offensive linemen to grade that high, you have to be doing something very, very right and basically never giving up pressures, because otherwise it's just inherently going to bring you down. But those two guys have been phenomenal. And then you guys will only need one guess to know who's number one on that list, and that's, of course, Aaron Rodgers. So that's where I'm at so far. Just to recap quick, Sternberger, Lancaster, Jackson, Preston Smith, and Dean Lowry in my bottom five, and Jair Alexander, Aaron Jones, Corey Linsley, David Bakhtiari, and Aaron Rodgers in my top five.
You know, Andy, I saw something today that Aaron Rodgers is the least pressured quarterback in the league right now. So our offensive line is playing with their hair on fire. And to counter your point on if the secondary, you know, anyone goes down, I would just like to say that if we need depth, Tremont Williams is still a free agent.
He is, which he should not be. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, but yes.
Very true. But yeah, I mean, that just doesn't say, it says so much about the offense, doesn't it? I mean, the offensive line playing with their hair on fire. I like that expression, Perry. That's good stuff. I mean, they've just been that terrific. And Perry, not to continue to quote your Twitter from Sunday, but you had the almost viral tweet, I'd say, that Aaron Rodgers, the last quarterback with four starts to not throw an interception this year. So that says a lot about Aaron through 4 weeks. I mean, the guy is not surprisingly efficient, but as always, he's ridiculously efficient, and to be number one, not surprising at all. So good.
And just
list,
to give
Andy.
A little context, Alex, Aaron Rodgers' grade for me through 18 games a season ago was plus 15.15. Mm-hmm. He's at plus 13.9 through four games this year. So wow. Like he's basically almost at the same spot he was through 18 games through four games. That's how ridiculous he has played so far. He's going to crush every, you know, if he continues like this, he's going to crush every grade I've ever put together in the last 3 years. So
I was going to say, is this at like ridiculous rate for the last 4 years for you? Is this like the craziest plus you've ever had to deal with, at least probably this early, I'd imagine. But have you ever seen a 4 week span this efficient from anybody on the Packers?
No, I mean, it's tough to grade every grouping is a little bit of a different grading. You know, it's not all created equal. So Sometimes it's really tough to compare like a quarterback to like a safety, for example. Sure. I think, you know, Za'Darius Smith had a four game stretch, you know, last year that was pretty insane. It was probably about a five game stretch, but, you know, that was pretty ridiculous. Rodgers has had a couple here and there, but he's trending right now to just blow every grade that I've had away. So yeah, he's playing amazing.
That's very interesting. I was curious on that part because I knew he was going to be high. I wasn't sure how high he historically ranks, I guess. So appreciate the insight on that. But let's get to our questionnaire roundtable, if you will. We're each going to post two questions that are kind of open. We'll do some short discussion on all six, and Perry picked the short stick, so she gets to go first.
I'm happy to go first. Let's get it. Mine. I was trying to find tricky ones, and I was like, why do that? Let's just have some fun. So, who do you guys think is the next offensive player to have a breakout game for the Packers? Because every player has had a game so far.
Yeah, that's good. I'll lead off, Andy, if you don't mind. I think. Maybe this is a little biased because I produce a show every Tuesday, but I got to go with Jamal Williams. I think, you know, obviously we should be getting back to at least a little bit normal with Devontae next week. But or this upcoming week, I guess, already. But I think Jamal just has opportunities to spread that offense out, and he really showed it, obviously, this past game. I don't know if you would consider that a breakout game since he didn't get into the end zone, but obviously a huge game receiving for him against Atlanta. But I think we're going to have a true Jamal Williams multi-touchdown game as soon as possible, I think. That would be my pick. Andy?
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, there's not a ton of people left, right?
So, right.
You know, Adams, Jones, and then Tanyan and Lazard have all had their day. So, you know, as much as I love him, it's not going to be Mercedes Lewis. You know, A.J. Dillon is kind of buried on that list. You know, Tyler Irvin's just not going to get enough touches. So, I mean, you're kind of limited to probably MVS if you don't believe that, you know, maybe he's had it already, which I think he still has more to give, or Jay Sternberger. I mean, I think those are really the, or again, Jamal Williams, I agree with you. So I think it's gotta be one of those three players. I would probably lean Jamal as well, but I'll be contrarian, so we're not answering the same guy. I'll say Marquez, and I still feel like he's just that one big game away, you know, maybe a six catch, 130 yard, you know, two touchdown performance from just getting that ultimate confidence and just really breaking out. We've seen a little bit more consistency out of him, and we've seen the playmaking ability. So I definitely don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, especially when Devontae gets back and teams are focusing on Jones and Adams and maybe can't pay as much attention to MVS like they were able to this last week. I'm going to go with MVS for those reasons.
Good stuff. Perry, did we miss any names that came to mind when you wrote that one up?
No, those were the three, Andy, that I had in mind. I was just curious which of them you guys would pick. But I agree with both. Both, I think they're both set for it. Week five or, yeah, and then the Texans. One against the Bucs, one against the Texans.
Yeah. And as much as I'd love it, he mentioned Tyler Irvin. I would love to see a Tyler Irvin breakout game because the guy is essentially, you know, the backwards Ty Montgomery transition these days. So would love to see him have a breakout game, but I don't know how possible that is. All right, Andy, your turn.
Yeah, and just to go back off of that, it would not surprise me to see a Tyler Irvin breakout game on special teams at some point where has, you know, a touchdown and maybe even another huge return of some sort. So that would not surprise me in any capacity. But all right, so my question, and maybe this is a little bit more negative leaning, which I apologize for, but what's the Packers' weakness that would prevent them from being great? So I guess where I want to go with this is if I told you that at some point the Packers, you know, got eliminated from the playoffs or lost, you know, the Super Bowl, whatever the case may be, what is it that you're afraid of that's really preventing them from making that step and winning a Super Bowl this year?
I can take this one, Alex,
if
you want. Yeah,
think on it, yeah.
It's interesting, Andy, because actually one of the questions, and it's not the one I'm going to ask since I think it'll be a similar similar conversation that I was going to say was, I don't feel like the defense is performing at the same level as offense. It's pretty obvious. And so I was going to ask, you know, what does this Packers defense have to do to make that jump? And I think this goes to exactly what you just asked is the offense is running. It's humming. But the defense, like, I hate to say it, but I'm souring a little bit on Pettine. I think we have so many great pieces and we're not putting it together like I would want us to. And this might be a cop-out answer, but I honestly feel like it's the run defense. And I know that we kept, you know, Todd Gurley in check, but like how impressive is that really? He's not the same player that he used to be, and the Falcons offense, like in general, was bad on Monday night. So I still feel like there's holes there, and I know that we're winning without Kenny Clark, but I don't know how sustainable that is. Agreed. And especially in the playoffs against, you know, we're going to get the best offenses. And honestly, this defense going back to a conversation we had earlier about how amazing the Chiefs are and they're a team you don't want to see, you know, I've been thinking about, okay, what if it's a Packers Chiefs Super Bowl? Like, this defense going up against the Chiefs offense scares the living daylights out of me. And it's not necessarily because I don't think we have the players to stop an offense like the Chiefs. It's that I don't like the way, you know, we get up and then Pettine plays so soft once we're up. Like if we're going to play a dynamic offense like the Chiefs or the Ravens or even Seattle, like we have to play lights out all four quarters and we haven't been doing that. So, I don't know what the fix is necessarily, but I would like to see some adjustments there.
Yeah, garbage time has been a struggle for sure for Mike Pettine's defense. So that's a great point. And I don't think that's a cop-out answer, Perry, because that's exactly where my mind went to, right? You hope there's no more injuries that are long-term like Kenny's has been, and we know we'll get him back into the mix at some point. But the depth of this run defense isn't not spectacular. We've seen, you know, cool stories like Chris Barnes and Kingsley Keke have some almost, you know, breakout games in a sense. Obviously, Barnes more so than Keke, but both those guys have played some nice roles, stepping up in some absences. So, I not to steal your term, but I don't know how sustainable this is either. That's exactly where my mind went when Andy posed it. Andy, I'd assume you're probably in a similar ballpark.
Yeah, it's interesting though, and while, you know, I kind of agree that, you know, the Falcons had some interesting an interesting offensive game plan, and I'm not sure how much stock you want to put into it. After that, Alvin Kamara run in the first quarter, which went for like 49 yards, which really wasn't on the defensive line. It was kind of more on the edge being set and kind of some scheme stuff. They really held both Kamara and Latavius Murray, as well as the Falcons with Todd Gurley, to 3.3-ish yards per carry on about 42 carries after that first quarter run by Kamara. So they've been a little bit better. I've seen improvement, and that was without Kenny Clark. So I actually feel like with Chris Barnes and Kamal Martin, Kamal hopefully coming back and playing a part in the inside linebacker group, you know, Kirksey, I think, should be used more as just a straight run defender than a three down linebacker. And then, you know, with Clark coming back, I think Lancaster's looked a little bit better. Adams has looked a little bit better. Keke has obviously made a jump. I think if Za'Darius and Preston and Gary can get back to setting a hard edge on the outside, that can clean up some of that stuff. I think they can be a fairly decent run defending team if they can get all the pieces working together. I like all the players in the secondary right now. Obviously, the offense is clicking on all cylinders. My fear is a little bit Mike Pettine's scheme. My fear is a little bit, as I mentioned earlier, if Jair or King could go down. But, you know, if your biggest fear is injuries, you know, every team can say that. There's just not a ton that I hate on this team right now. I like the potential for everything. And I love the fact that even though the defense hasn't looked great so far, you know, even Za'Darius, whose stat line is great, hasn't been exactly the Za'Darius that we were used to at the end of last season. Preston hasn't been himself. Rashawn's taken a jump, but he hasn't received a ton of playing time yet, especially with the injury. Clark hasn't been in there. We haven't even seen Kamal Martin yet. Like, I still think this defense has a lot to give that we haven't seen yet. And I'm optimistic about the defense, even though maybe it hasn't been great through four games.
Your optimism calms me down, because you've studied this, man. I like it. No, that's good. Perry, anything else on the defense?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I completely agree. I mean, you're picking the negatives out of a team that's undefeated and looks great. But it's just that, you know, if there were a few holes that I would plug, those would be it. And if we can just kind of shore that up a little bit, like, this is a Super Bowl contending team, I think, especially after watching the Seahawks tonight, or I should say Sunday night, you know, we clearly look like the favorites. The Seahawks defense is also quite bad. You know, they have no pass rush, and Dalvin Cook is running holes through them. So it's nitpicking at, you know, a team that's still, you know, A+ in my mind.
Yeah, perfect. It's nitpicking perfection almost to a point. Maybe not perfection, but they are perfect in the record books at 4-0. So from pessimism, let's move to optimism. I want to talk about Aaron Rodgers, because who doesn't want to talk about Aaron Rodgers? He is on pace to, by far, have the best season of his career. He's on pace for just under 5,000 yards. He's on pace for 52 touchdowns, which would be 7 more than his career high of 45. I want to ask about the ceiling. In this year two Matt LaFleur offense, our sample size of a quarter of the season has been not only MVP level, but better than his MVP level previously. So I'm just going to open it very, very broadly. How do you view, because I feel like everybody's answer might be a little bit different, how do you view Aaron Rodgers' ceiling in 2020?
45 touchdowns around there, 2 interceptions and an MVP and a Super Bowl ring. I think that's the ceiling. I don't know how much more you want than that. And I mean, I think all of those things are real. I think it'll probably be, maybe closer to, you know, high 30s, low 40s touchdowns. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, maybe you could get to, he could maybe, guys, get to 3 or 4 interceptions. Maybe.
Oh my gosh.
I know, which would be devastating.
Bring in Jordan Love.
I know, exactly. I think it's time. It's Tim Boyle time, to say the least. But, who knows if they'll win a Super Bowl. Those things are impossible to predict. But they can be the number one seed in the NFC. They can go out and win a Super Bowl. He can be the MVP. He can hit 40-plus touchdowns, and he can hit under 5 interceptions. I mean, the ceiling is, wherever you want to put it. There's no ceiling high enough that you could put right now.
To quote Mean Girls, the limit does not exist. Like, he's like you said, Alex, having a historic year. And for this year to be a historic for Aaron Rodgers, like, that's bonkers. I don't have another word to describe it. Like, we've seen greatness from him before. And to, especially in the last few years, I think it's been hard to watch what we call, and he says, down years are better than other quarterbacks' years, but down years for him, and that's kind of been a little bit like a jarring, I guess, as a fan. And then you see him like be so comfortable in this offense and really just trusting everyone and doing things we haven't seen in so long. And he's happy. He's enjoying himself. So I think, when Aaron Rodgers is smiling on the field, like, if I'm a defense, I'm afraid. And there's a few things, and I think I've talked about this previously, but there's a few things about this season too that I think are really playing to his strengths. Not that I'm, I of course want fans there, and I would love to be able to go to a game, but the empty stadiums are allowing him to like really hone in on his cadence. He's had the defense jump offsides and get a free play offsides every game so far this season. So it's just everything's coming together. And I agree. I think he hits 50 touchdowns for the season for the first time. I think that he definitely breaks his passing yards record, which, by the way, if he does that, he then moves to number 10 on the all-time passing yards leaders list. Wow. He jumps Warren Moon and John Elway. I am personally tracking that a little bit, if you can't tell in my head. And so it's just, like I said, there's no ceiling. I would love to see him finally get an NFC championship game at Lambeau.
Me as well. That's of course ideal, because that, again, that's never happened. So we need to see it. I agree 100%. But when you mention names like John Elway and Warren Moon, when you're talking about Aaron Rodgers, not bad company to be in, I don't think. Those guys, they don't have gold jackets or anything. But, Aaron Rodgers, I think I love that 50-touchdown prediction. I think I'm right there with you. Like I said, he's on pace for 52, and he's been playing really nicely for 4 weeks. We don't know how, if he's going to be able to keep it at this level. But 50 touchdowns looks possible. He looks like Patrick Mahomes in 2018, where he was just playing on such an unbelievable pace, and he didn't slow down. And I think that's what we've got in store for Aaron Rodgers. We just hope that ends in a Super Bowl victory. So I'm with both of you. The ceiling is ridiculous. I didn't understand the Mean Girls reference. Never seen that movie. Might get dragged for that. But yeah, here it goes. Never seen it. Sorry.
You got work to do.
Okay, Andy. Let's get you on Thanksgiving food first.
Pot calling the kettle black over here.
Yeah, exactly. Perry, you need to talk so Andy doesn't, please.
Okay. My next question is one where I actually don't know the answer. So definitely trying to gain some insight from you both. But I'm curious, looking at the rest of the Packers schedule in 2020, like, what is the matchup that's going to be the biggest test for them? Like, what game coming up is going to be a potential loss or the hardest game to win?
This was one of mine. Yeah. No, go ahead, Andy.
No, I was going to say, I don't know that there's a specific game. I do think that, overall, this next stretch of, what is it, like 4 games? Yeah, it's 4 games, is going to test the Packers to see, maybe where they're at overall. I think when you go at Tampa, at Houston with Deshaun Watson, I know they haven't been great, but I still think those AFC South, the interconference games on the road can be a little bit fluky, a lot of unscouted looks. They got a new head coach. They're 1-0 without Bill O'Brien. So I tweeted out when Bill O'Brien got fired that game just got exponentially harder for the Packers. Then they have Minnesota, which, while they may not be a great team right now, that's still, one of those interdivision games, and they're going to want to get back that loss from week one. And then you go to 49ers on the road, which, if you remember last year when the Packers went to California, it was never good. So while I don't necessarily know that any of those games is exactly the huge litmus test, I think as a whole, that group of 4 will be really good to test the Packers to see where they're at. And I think we'll know a little bit more after that stretch of 4 games than maybe we did after the initial 4 games. But I don't know that there's a really hardcore matchup. It might just be Tampa. This next coming game might be the hardest game left on their schedule, which is crazy to say.
I think looking at it through the scope of the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, I would agree with you. Tampa seems like the big one. But I'm glad Perry asked this. Cheers, Perry, because this was one of the ones that crossed my mind, and I'm glad somebody asked it, because I don't look at the schedule in front of me and really say, that's going to be a tough one for the Packers at all. I mean, unless of course you can talk about the Chicago and Minnesota games, but again, both of those teams don't scare me a ton. I think the matchup in Tampa Bay will be an interesting one, but I think that's still Packers by double digits isn't a crazy expectation. Houston doesn't have a head coach, so not that scared. I mean, I know they still have Deshaun Watson and a defense with some pieces, but they don't have a head coach or a GM that's actually, you know, in a permanent role. So, you know, I'm not afraid of Romeo Crennel at home against Minnesota to kick off, you know, the month of November. Short break and you go to San Francisco. And as Andy mentioned, last time they played in San Francisco in November, it didn't go too hot, did it? So hopefully they can do better than last year. But San Francisco doesn't look like the team they were last year, as we talked about earlier in the pod. So really, yeah, nothing. I mean, Jacksonville doesn't scare me. Indy doesn't. Philly doesn't. Carolina doesn't. Tennessee maybe, but we haven't seen them play in 2 weeks, so it's hard to remember where they're at. But yeah, in short, no, I don't think there's a game on the schedule that really, really, as a Packers fan, makes me nervous at all.
That was my reaction also. I definitely think the next 2 weeks are probably the hardest. And so if we went 1-1 in the next 2 weeks, like, that wouldn't surprise me
right.
a ton. Like, the Texans, now that Bill O'Brien's not there anymore, could be sneaky. But it's so interesting to see the rest of the schedule and, like, actually have a level of confidence that, like, the Packers could realistically go in and win each and every one of these games. I do think that, you know, division games get kind of wonky, that they're always played a little bit tougher, a little bit harder by both opponents. And so I think that them losing to either the Vikings or the Bears in some of these next matchups isn't wild. You know, you watch like the Raiders take down the Chiefs, and it's just those division games are just always a little bit different. There's just always something different about them. But yeah, I mean, my prediction going into the season was the Packers would go 11-5, and that feels like I set the bar too low for
way
them.
Low. Yeah, that's low.
So, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and by no means am I saying, you know, obviously I'm confident, but in no means, just to piggyback off what you said, by no means am I saying they're going to go 16-0. I don't think that should ever be a reasonable expectation, because you're due for at least one loss every year. And, but 14-2 doesn't feel crazy through 4 weeks. And that's probably the best feeling as a fan of a football team.
Yeah, and that first round bye, if they could get it too, would mean a ton to them. I know all the COVID stuff was making really, you know, things really wonky with byes, but
right.
when you have a week five bye and you're a team that's expected to maybe compete for, you know, a Super Bowl, you know, that late season bye could really come in handy with, again, a very early bye to start the season. So we could end up with a week 18 right. and 19 with stuff anyway, which could get the bye there, but we'll see what happens. But that's going to definitely be something to monitor. I'll jump into mine. We should probably go lightning round for these last couple of questions. But how would you grade Brian Gutekunst's 2020 offseason so far? So we're only a quarter of the way through the season. And even then, a draft you can't really, you know, evaluate fully for about 3 years. But so in free agency, he goes out and gets Christian Kirksey, who was okay and then had the injury, which was really his MO going into the season, as he couldn't stay healthy. And that's kind of been the case again this year. Rick Wagner, who's played well but is not a starter at the moment and is not currently part of the main offensive line rotation, although he did play some nice tight end this past week instead of Mercedes Lewis. Devin Funchess opted out, which you can't really fault Brian Gutekunst for, but not getting anything from him. He'd found John Lovett and Perry Nickerson as waiver wire claims, but again, Lovett's played a handful of snaps. Perry Nickerson's been inactive for the entire season, I believe, so far. In the draft, of course, he gets Jordan Love, A.J. Dillon, Josiah DeGuara, Kamal Martin, John Runyon, Hanson, Stepaniak, Vernon Scott, and Jonathan Garvin, which if you put it all together, it's about a handful of snaps, maybe not too much more. You know, Kamal Martin's been hurt. Josiah DeGuara is now on IR. Dillon has kind of been a luxury as a number three running back. We know Jordan Love is basically a lottery ticket that'll pay off, you know, later if he does. Hanson was released and is on the practice squad. Stepaniak is on the NFL injured list. or non-football injury list, I should say. Scott's played a handful of snaps. Garvin's played a handful of snaps, but not a ton of impact from the rookie class. In undrafted free agency, maybe the best move of the offseason, they get Chris Barnes. They let walk Kyler Fackrell, Brian Bulaga, Blake Martinez, BJ Goodson, and Jason Spriggs. I don't think they're missing any of those players. And then they did re-sign Mercedes Lewis, Tyler Irvin, and Mason Crosby, who, while none of them are necessarily a reason why this team is succeeding or like a core part of the team, they all play very important roles, especially Mason Crosby. So it's kind of been this interesting dynamic where none of the core members of this Green Bay Packers team had anything to do with the 2020 free agency draft, undrafted free agency, et cetera. Maybe a save for Chris Barnes, but I'm just curious your overall thoughts. How would you grade Brian Gutekunst just on his 2020, you know, off season?
You couldn't go without mentioning your man crush, Chris Barnes, twice in that, could you?
I had to mention him a couple times.
Yeah, exactly. I'll give you my rapid fire response and I'll let Perry evaluate it better than I can. But, you know, it's hard to evaluate, right? Because you said there's not a ton of impact there. You know, maybe if we were giving A.J. Dillon the ball at the 1 yard line, yeah, that'd be awesome. But that hasn't happened yet. So we'll see. I think you have to say still at minimum a B because they're 4-0 and it seems to be working out just fine. I mean, obviously, maybe you'd like some more depth in the rush defense, as we mentioned earlier. But other than that, I mean, they're still 4-0, Andy. I still got to give them at minimum a B. I'd probably go B plus, though.
All right, Perry.
Yeah, I was going to say it's kind of like a net neutral sort of offseason for him. Like the free agents are serviceable, not crazy impactful. And the draft class, like I don't like evaluating a draft class in their first season, especially with the philosophy of the Packers is this like draft and develop. But I will say that, you know, their rookies have, you know, sprinkled in there some pretty impactful snaps. I think John Runyon coming in and doing what he needed to was pretty impressive. We are so good. I shouldn't say we. The Packers, I'm not part of that organization technically. the Packers are so good at finding undrafted talent. Like it blows my mind. So in that and like our scouting department, I give them, you know, kind of a hat tip. But yeah, I agree with Alex. It's kind of just a B. It's fine. It's average.
Yeah, and as the college student in me knows, you know, D's get degrees. So even if you evaluate this as a D because not a lot's happened, it's still good enough to be 4-0, I guess. Andy, how would you grade it?
Yeah, I mean, I think Perry hit the nail on the head. I think I don't know if I would say a B, but it's kind of just an incomplete or we'll see, or, you know, it's kind of just middle of the road. I think you can have a scenario where he's had, you know, an A plus, you know, or A last couple seasons, which has really developed the depth on this team, you know, finding players like Alan Lazard and really being a part of the group that hired Matt LaFleur as well. I think, you know, that has really set this up. I don't know that this off season particularly has been that great to maybe take them to the next level, but I wouldn't necessarily downgrade it either because they haven't needed some of these players because they have had the depth on the top of the roster. So I'm not going to drag him for it. But I don't know that I would necessarily, you know, applaud him for this last off season either.
Well said. I think that's about as fair as you can get. All right. I'm going to make this as rapid fire as I can, but I was kind of proud of this question. So the trade deadline is 22 days away, as of Monday. So It's creeping up on us. We already see AJ Green, maybe as the amateur lip readers have said, saying trade me on the sideline. If you're interested in that, I don't know. You could be. So I'm going to ask a two-part question, yes or no, and feel free to elaborate as much or as little as you'd like. A, would you like to see the Packers make a move in the trade deadline and maybe either a position or if there's a player that comes to mind? And B, do you think they make a move in the trade deadline? Let's throw it to New York first, Perry.
Wow. Do I think that they're going to? No.
Okay.
I think that we, unless it's for draft capital, but like our cap situation is a little precarious at the moment, and we have a lot of free agents that we potentially want to sign. So I don't see them signing anyone to money. Russ Ball's a magician, but he's not that good. And is there anyone that I would want us to go get? Maybe a defensive lineman, but like honestly, no. I just think this team is complete enough, and they're doing what they need to with the players that they have. And in looking at the cap and looking at our free agent class, not just in this coming off season, but the following one too, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I think Brian Gutekunst will be active in conversations, but here's the big thing. They can't take on salary cap, like, at all with what's coming for next year. I mean, they can take on a little bit. So what you'd be looking at is a player similar to what happened with Leonard Williams a season ago, if you kind of think back to that, where he was in the last year of his deal and, you know, what was it? The Jets basically knew they weren't going to bring him back. And, you know, they were able to get maybe a pick for him when they knew they weren't going to re-sign him, but he was still really cheap in that last year of his contract. So I think you almost have to look at players who are in that last year of their deal. I know there's been some rumblings. Desmond King hasn't been getting a ton of playing time with the Chargers. I think he's in the last year of his deal. That could maybe be somebody that makes sense if they, this is again, if they maybe would need a safety or something like that. Maybe if somebody got hurt, Marcus May for the Jets is in a similar situation. You're looking for bad teams who have good players in the last year of their deal for a team that maybe doesn't have the cap to re-sign some of these players. What you could also end up with is teams like the Texans and the Falcons. If they're bad, they may not have the GM to be making those moves, and the owner may say, you know what, we're not going to be we're not going to be making any moves until we actually get the GM that we want in the door, because we, you know, we don't want the future, anything in the future decided until they get in the door. You also come up with a situation where there's now 14 teams that are getting into the playoffs rather than 12. And while that may not seem like a huge difference, the teams that are hovering around, you know, maybe a little bit below 500 may now have a shot to get in, which may take, you know, five or six teams off of the trade deadline that would normally be on it. So you're talking about a lot of contingencies here where a lot of the teams that may normally look to deal may not be dealing, and Green Bay doesn't have the cap to take someone on. So there's that big piece of it. And then I think the other thing, even if you're looking at the NFC East, all of those teams might be in the running for a playoff spot, even if they don't have any wins, because they're all terrible. So like, what teams are going to be looking to deal, and is Green Bay interested in any of those players? So I think there'll be conversations. It wouldn't shock me if they got maybe made a minor move, but I wouldn't necessarily expect it.
Okay, fair. Yeah, that's a way I hadn't thought of it before with the expanded playoff. I think that's a brilliant point, Andy. Good stuff. Let's do another rapid fire round while we're at it, just to wrap up the show here. Our crew here at Packaday will obviously be doing a lot of Packers Bucks previews this week, but since we're a Monday show, we don't do a ton of it. But I'd like to do a sentence each, so I'll fill some time while you guys let it brew in your head. A sentence of maybe what you're looking forward to, what you're looking at, just a thought on the Buccaneers hosting the Packers on Sunday afternoon. I picked on Perry last time, so we'll go to the 920, Andy.
Yeah, just a couple really quick thoughts. I think that Vita Vea injury is going to be really devastating for the Buccaneers. They don't really have a player like him. Most teams don't that can kind of come in and fill in. And I think if you look at their linebackers, Devin White and Levante David, those are two fly-to-the-football linebackers that really need space eaters in front of them so that they're not going to get caught on blocks and can go and just get to the football and make plays. So that, I think that loss of Vita Vea is a very major loss for that Tampa Bay defense. And then just really quick, I cannot wait to watch, you know, Tristan Wirfs, Ryan Jensen, and Ali Marpet, who have been fantastic along that offensive line, hopefully against Zadarius and Kenny Clark and Rashawn Gary and that full Kingsley Keke, Preston Smith, that whole group of Packers rushers. I think that really could decide the game, that Packers front versus the Bucks offensive line. That's what I'm going to kind of be watching for.
Good stuff. Perry?
Yeah, I'm looking at the Bucks secondary. I think they're, you know, kind of combo of Carlton Davis, Jamel Dean, Jordan Whitehead, Anton Winfield Jr. is pretty stellar. They're playing pretty well. Carlton Davis already has 3 interceptions in 5 weeks, which is wild, taking the same draft as Jair, actually. So I think this is going to be the actual, like, kind of first test on our passing attack and Aaron Rodgers' accuracy. And I know that we, you know, he's very turnover adverse, but the secondary is pretty legit. And I really enjoyed watching Anton Winfield Jr. But if someone tells me one more time that his dad was in the NFL, I might scream. But I just think that this is going to be a pretty big test on our wide receivers. And I'm looking forward, definitely looking forward to having Devontae back against them.
100%. I was going to say that the Packers offense, after a week off and obviously throwing Devontae back into the mix, I'm excited to see what they're hitting on. Obviously 30 points in every game this year. Their offense is going to be something to watch in that game as a whole. But I'm looking at both offenses. Obviously, some injuries mixed into both offenses. Tom Brady has put up 30 points in 2 of their 3 wins this year, only put up 19 in their loss to Chicago on Sunday. So we know it will be a bounce back type of week, or looking for a bounce back for the GOAT and Tom Brady. I'm looking at the offenses. I think we could get into a shootout. Type of shootout. I don't think it'll be like a 40-35 game, but I think it could be a high scoring and we're comfortable with at least through the first 4 weeks. So I'm looking at the two great future gold jacket wearing quarterbacks going head to head for potentially the final time.
Love it.
Good stuff, guys. That's Andy Herman at Andy Herman NFL on Twitter. Perry Goldstein in the NYC joining us. I know it's late over there, Perry. Always appreciate the time, and it's good to be back with you guys. At Perry_Goldstein on Twitter for her. I'm at Alex_Strofe, and we are at Packaday Podcast. Guys, always great to catch up with you, and we'll do it again soon.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Go Pack.